And this is Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for this show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Jason Croft, is at the controls this morning. In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about cars. And if you're thinking about bringing a new vehicle into your life, whether we're talking about brand new, absolutely new, or maybe one that's just new to you, and you're trying to make up your mind about what would work best for you and for your family, we may be able to help you out in this part of the show. We'll be talking with Jeff Bartlett from Consumer Reports. He's the deputy editor for online for autos. The magazine has just put out its annual auto issue. It's been coming out in the April for every year now for a long, long time. The main focus of this issue of Consumer Reports is cars. So they rate the best and the worst new cars. They look at things like reliability and fuel economy and performance and safety. So depending on which of those things is most important to you, you can choose that way. They also make overall recommendations in different categories considering all of these sorts of things. We can talk about that. Also, they have other kinds of information, things to think about when you're buying a car. Also, they have ratings of used cars. So maybe you're thinking that you'd like to have something that was pre-owned and save a little bit of money that way. You can take a look at that. So you can go to the library, you can go to the bookstore, wherever you buy magazines, and you can get this issue. But you can also look at it online if you go to, and we're told the easiest thing to do is go to www.consumerreports.org/April. And you can see it, and I believe that it's all the same information is on there that's in the print edition. So either way, if you'd like to get at some of this information, you can do that. And here this morning, of course, questions from people who are listening are welcome, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. It's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And also we have set on our website, we've set up a link to the Consumer Reports website. So we'll try to make it easy for you to get at that information. Well, Mr. Bartlett, hello.
Hi.
Thanks for talking with us.
Oh, always glad to talk cars.
We certainly appreciate it. Well, maybe I'll just ask to start out here. As I say, one of the things that you do with the magazine, and you've done this for a long time, is considering all of the various things that you, individual categories in which you rate cars, you do come up with your what you consider to be your best picks in new cars in different categories, things like family sedan, small sedan, green car, fun to drive. You got pickups, you got SUVs of different sizes and so forth. Maybe just would you want to mention in some of what are maybe the most popular categories and maybe things that would be things like sedans and so forth. You know, what are your overall best picks?
Sure. Top picks is something we look forward to doing every year in the April issue. For us, we test cars inside and out all year long, and we provide myriad ways for people to sort, list by whatever their priorities are. This is kind of our opportunity to reaffirm what we think are important. Vehicles that perform extremely well in our road tests, which include over 50 tests conducted over thousands of miles by our expert team, as well as reliability, based on our annual survey of about 1.3 million vehicles, and safety. So we think people deserve a good, safe car, and we look closely at performance in our tests, as well as crash tests performed by the insurance industry and the government. And combined, from that, we're able to make what we call top picks in 10 categories. This year, among the more popular categories, family sedan, we have the new Honda Accord, which is a wonderful, refined, roomy, versatile vehicle that's going to satisfy a lot of commuters and family needs. Another popular category is pickup trucks. Mm. That's one of the best-selling categories, the best-selling in America by volume. And this year we see Toyota usurped by the Chevrolet Silverado. The new Silverado has performed very well in our tests. It's a very livable workhorse of a machine. It bumped Toyota this year due to a slight dip in reliability records for the Toyota Tundra, which technically outscores the Silverado in our test.
Yeah. Well, this, you know, once again this year, and I think it's been true the last few years, if you look at the top picks, they are almost all, with the exception of the pickup, which is the Chevrolet, they are almost all Japanese nameplates. They're the small sedan, your top pick is a Hyundai, the green cars, the Prius, no big surprise there. The fun-to-drive car is a Mazda, and it sort of goes on and on. We're looking at Toyotas and Hyundais and Infinities and Lexuses. The only American car here in the top picks is the pickup, and in past years, that probably, as you say, that would have been a Toyota in past years. So if people are really, if what they say is, look, I really wanted to buy an American, a car with an American, from an American manufacturer, what can you say about how American manufacturers are doing these days? And if you, if that was really important to you, you wanted to buy an American car, what would your suggestion be?
Sure. And that, I think, is an increasingly important issue, especially with people anticipating a tax refund from the federal level that, you know, in theory is going to jumpstart the economy. You know, people maybe think, want to make sure that it's going into literally the continental economy. And that can happen with American-branded vehicles and vehicles built in America. But for those who want an American nameplate, you'll see that there have actually been dramatic improvements from General Motors in particular in their most recent models. GM has had a variety of cars and SUVs that have scored very well in our tests. In some cases, we haven't yet had enough reliability data in order to recommend them at this level for a top pick, partly because they're so new. We take these top picks very seriously and make sure that we have full data to back them. But people can find, we have a list on the site as well as one in the blog that just went up that details the very best of the American cars.
You do something here where you give report cards on automakers. This is a section where the article, the headline article is, who makes the best cars? And so you have here automaker report cards considering a variety of things, the highs and the lows of all these manufacturers and reliability. The top is Honda. It's Honda, Toyota, Subaru. That's 1, 2, 3. And then there are a number of other makers here. And in some cases, the scores are fairly close, although there's a pretty big spread here between Honda at the top and Chrysler at the bottom. One thing I thought was interesting is that the number four, if what was really important to you was having a European luxury car, the car, it looks like here the car to buy probably would be a BMW. And I'm interested particularly because in past years, two European nameplates that had been fairly well thought of, Mercedes and Volvo, seem to have been in kind of a decline. Maybe they've made some small improvements, but I guess in that category, if that's really what you want, the car that you would want to look at is the BMW.
That's right, and this really speaks to everyone has different priorities. And you know, if a European nameplate, especially something with a sporting character and good luxury, is important to you, BMW stands high in our testing. The vehicles generally perform very well. You know, as no surprise, anyone familiar with the tagline, ultimate driving machine. But we're also seeing BMW make improvements in reliability, which is very important to us. In fact, most of the versions of the 3, 5, and 7 series have average or better reliability. And this has gone a long way to elevating the performance of that brand in our report cards.
Mm-hmm. How are Mercedes and Volvo doing it? Do you think that they are starting to make a little bit of a climb back from this sort of dip in, particularly, I guess, here, again, with these cars, the reliability issue has been the big thing?
With Volvo, we've been seeing some improvements across the range. But Mercedes in particular is very troubling to us. Mercedes and Land Rover, on average, are below their competitors. Both of them are significantly below average, putting them fairly low in our list of the 33 brands that we're tracking. And in fact, Land Rover is right there at the bottom. And Mercedes is 29th, if I recall that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder if you have a feel, just I am not trying here to boost Mercedes, nor do I drive one, nor do I ever think I will. But I'm curious as to what you think has happened with Mercedes and whether, sure, in fact, it is, as some people suggested, it had to do with the marriage with Chrysler and with siphoning off resources. You know, they were trying to do some what they could to make Chrysler a better car. And some people, I think, at least people at Mercedes felt this, that what was happening was that resources were being put into Chrysler and not into Mercedes. And for that reason, not only did Chrysler didn't help Chrysler, it actually hurt Mercedes.
Well, it certainly hasn't helped Chrysler. Certainly the most recent Chrysler models have performed rather low in our testing, and there are some reliability questions with certain models. In terms of the internal resources, a little hard to say from the outside. I mean, that sounds like a good theory, but I can say from our data that what we've seen through the years is a lot of problems appear with some of the more complex systems within the Mercedes cars. These are very sophisticated machines, and the engineering is amazing, but the more complicated the machine, the more chances something may become a problem, and perhaps an expensive one if it's out of warranty. So another theory is that being driven to be on the leading edge, to have these sophisticated systems soon to market, to be leading, may be putting them at greater risk. You know, sometimes it's always good to be the second company or person to launch a new product, because then you benefit from the experience of the others and a more measured pace. So I think the aggressiveness may have been a key contributor to that.
All right. Well, if people listening have questions about cars, maybe you're thinking about buying a new vehicle, whether brand new off the showroom floor or just new to you, and you have questions, give us a call. Our guest is Jeff Bartlett. He is deputy editor online for autos at Consumer Reports. Their auto issue is out. The print issue is out. If you want to look at that, you can also go to their website and take a look at that. And if you're interested in particular cars and if you're interested in specific things, say you want the best fuel economy, you want the safest car, you want the most reliable car, you want to break it down that way, you can do that. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We have several callers here. We'll start out here in Champaign County, where we are with line one. Hello.
Hi. Is there anything like a hybrid diesel? Seems to me that the efficiency that you get from running something at a constant velocity is even more important. Would be even more important with a diesel. And I'm just wondering if that's on anybody's radar. It seems to me that they could actually heat the engine up, while it's in the electric mode, to make it operate at a higher efficiency, less particulate pollution. Mm-hmm. From the very beginning. I have a related question about the hybrids too, if I could.
Okay. Let me tackle the first part then. Excellent question. There have been a number of show vehicles very recently, including at Geneva this week, that have shown the concept of combining diesel and hybrids. And as you say, each on their own provides significant benefits over a traditional gasoline engine. Combined, it could deliver terrific fuel economy. But one very significant limitation is each also introduces a fair amount of cost that would be hard to absorb on a average priced mainstream vehicle. If you think a hybrid system at minimum is going to add $2,000 to $3,000, a diesel is going to do the same. All of a sudden, a compact car might be as expensive as a luxury car or tickling that space. So there may be some limitations in going to market, but it's definitely interesting technology that's being developed.
About the hybrid engine and the concept itself, there's always been this perennial, idea that the auto industry is in collusion with the petroleum, and they've held back on some energy saving device. And I've heard this specifically related in terms of just the hybrid Prius, that supposedly some people in Wash University down here in St. Louis sort of hacked the system, and they just turned the place. Do you know anything about this story before I go any further with it? Or?
I don't know in particular, but it sounds pretty interesting.
Well, the idea is that they just tweaked where it cuts in to electric mode by a little bit. They've just pushed that back just a little bit. And the idea there is that, you know, it's a judgment call how much electricity you need to build up to make sure you'll have time to, you know, to keep moving, basically.
Sure.
And so, but they supposedly just tweaked it just a little bit, and they got a huge increase in efficiency. And supposedly Toyota cracked down on them and said you can't, you know, it's a proprietary software, you can't mess with it. I suppose they gave justifications about how it was going to damage their engine or some such, I'm sure, but...
Sure. That actually doesn't surprise me. That was always one of the factors since hybrids were introduced. You know, how far can you push it? And one of the realities in developing any car for mass production is that the manufacturer has to deal with the full spectrum of uses, best case and worst case. You know, they need to make sure that the Prius works at higher elevations for people climbing up mountains and so forth, as well as those who may be in the idealized world of putting around in an urban setting. So some of those things, limitations, are going to be built into really any car to make sure that it adheres to all customer expectations as well as meets their own tolerances for warranty and longevity, and for meeting myriad federal requirements. So other cars, traditional gas cars, can be hacked too. I mean, you can always program in a few extra horsepower, you know, if you have a performance-oriented car.
And called hot-rodding, yeah.
Yeah, hot-rodding. Enthusiasts do that, but there's always a compromise. Some people may be willing to accept it, but the manufacturer has to look at the whole.
Yeah. Well, the specific example you gave about mountainous areas, one of the, you know, the really good things about the Prius is in that region is that it recaptures your braking energy. So I'm not sure if that's the example that. Hello, I'll sign off here. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Just real quick, and I have some other questions I want to get to. I just want to ask a diesel question because it seems to me that going back just a couple of years, at the point where we really started to see run-ups in prices for oil and then for gasoline, there started to be maybe a little bit more interest in diesel. And it seems to me at the time, just as I said, going back a couple of years here in the United States, if you wanted to buy a diesel car, a passenger car, you had, I think, only maybe two or three choices. You could have a Volkswagen or you could have a Mercedes, and that was it. Are there now more options for people who would like to at least think about the possibility of in a passenger car having a diesel engine?
Well, those are the leading brands still. However, there are many companies that are looking very closely at introducing diesel engines, including Honda and Subaru. Both have shown engines overseas, and we're likely to see them here soon. For production, it may be a couple years out, but companies are definitely looking at that. But a recent little hiccup in the path to increasing diesel sales has been the rise in diesel fuel price. You know, if that trend continues, consumers may be left weighing the increased fuel efficiency and potentially longevity of the powertrain against, you know, they're actually paying a little bit more at the pump. Unfortunately, it may not be an easy decision for consumers, but more choices always help.
All right. Let's talk with someone in Lafayette, Indiana, on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hi. I'm calling about the Mini Cooper. We live out in the... We do put a lot of miles on vehicles, and we thought that this was one way to accomplish some fuel efficiency on long trips. We can put all four of us in there, but an hour and a half is about as long as we're comfortable with. But I'm curious about the safety issue.
Well, that's a good question. That was certainly one of the issues that many expected when they first introduced the car in the U.S., a land known for vehicles of 15 feet or longer in length. The Mini actually does quite respectable in its myriad safety tests. you can take a look on our site or the government site and see specific crash test ratings for it, broken down not just front and side, but also the details that would itemize potential injury risks. But overall, it does well. In fact, the Mini Cooper is a recommended car from Consumer Reports.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. We'll go next to someone in Champaign. This is line number two. Hello.
Yes, I want to ask a question about a specific GM brand, specifically Chevrolet, and it's just been redesigned, I believe, this year. I don't know about it in terms of reliability, safety, and fuel efficiency, and that's the Chevrolet Malibu.
Chevrolet Malibu has been getting a lot of attention recently, hasn't it?
Yes, I saw one other day, and it really caught my eye.
It's a good-looking car, very roomy. We've actually been quite impressed with it. We've just recently tested it, and it did well. It's too new for us to assign either reliability or owner satisfaction ratings to it. It just simply needs to be on the market a little bit longer. But in our own testing, it's done quite well. It's quiet. It rides well. The handling is responsive. Overall, we found that the V6 got 20 miles per gallon. So,
is that in the city?
Well, that's a combination highway city on
okay,
our...
Okay, 20 miles. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, sir.
All right.
You bet.
Yeah, thank you. And we'll go on again to somebody in next in Monticello. This is line number three.
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Hi. I have two questions, one of which you just brought up a second ago about diesel. I was surprised to see how high it is here compared to overseas, which is very off-putting. And then the other question I have is I just inherited my father's Lexus ES350. I was a little reluctant to keep it because of premium gas and gas mileage, but I believe it has. It's highly rated. Could you expound on the Lexus ES350, and I'll get off the phone and listen.
Sure, absolutely. First, a touch on the diesel. In many countries outside, beyond the U.S., diesel fuel is actually subsidized in some ways, or the opposite. It's not taxed as heavily. So the prices there are artificially skewed to favor diesel for its increased fuel efficiency. As far as the Lexus ES goes, that's a recommended vehicle. It's done very well in our testing. It has an excellent reliability track record. Fuel economy is about 23 miles per gallon. On the use of premium fuel, I'm hazy on the specifics for this one, but with any car that you think needs premium fuel, double-check the owner's manual because there is a slight difference between recommended premium fuel and required. Many cars are it's recommended, and the engine will give you the full advertised horsepower if you use that. And you may sacrifice 1, 2, 3% of peak performance using a regular fuel. Considering most people don't drive wide open throttle all the time, the fuel savings would be well worth it. So always double check if you've been using premium fuel.
Yeah, this occasionally here on the program we have an auto mechanic on, and this subject has come up. And his suggestion was, well, try to go down to the middle grade of fuel and see if you can detect any performance difference in your car. See what the car thinks, and then if the car appears to be running to your satisfaction, well. Then there you go. Myself, we have a Volkswagen, and we tried that, and the car said, I don't like this gas. So we put the premium fuel in the car. I suppose that is a disadvantage to some European cars. Maybe it's basically all the European cars. The upscale models, that's what they're going to tell you, that they recommend that you use premium fuel.
Right, but if it's not required, then it's your choice.
All right. Well, people can try it and see what happens. Next, we'll go to someone in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi there.
Yes.
I drive a 100-mile highway miles a day, and I'm interested in the Honda Fit as far as wondering about reliability, fuel efficiency, and safety. And I have we're three people in our family.
Mm-hmm.
And like to travel a little, but it looks like it's interesting how you can maneuver the seats and stuff. So what's your opinion on this?
I think it's a really neat vehicle. The seats themselves are kind of a masterful bit of mechanical origami, you know, the way they flip, fold, and so forth. You can fit a surprising amount of stuff inside that. In fact, the passenger space is even more generous than you would expect. You know, good headroom, good leg room. Fuel economy-wise, overall, we've gotten 32 miles per gallon in that. Though if you were driving strictly highway or mostly on your very long commute, and I don't envy that, you would do better.
Okay.
Fully loaded, you know, not so much. It is a recommended vehicle, and it has an excellent track record for reliability. It's excellent for owner satisfaction with our readers. And we've done owner cost analysis that we've just launched on all models, and the fit is excellent there as well. So it sounds like a smart choice to me.
And safety seems good, too. It's a small car. And
relative to its class, safety is good.
Okay.
There's no cheating the laws of physics.
Right.
You know, fit versus suburban, you know, you may place certain odds, but relative to its class, it does well.
Right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. I think that particularly because more and more there will be more people who are concerned about mileage as a lead concern for people who are interested in that, and perhaps also for people who don't do a lot of open highway driving. I wonder whether that class of car, a car which is really quite small, whether we're going to see more manufacturers offering models like that.
You'll definitely see that. Many manufacturers are looking at how to get in that space for a couple reasons. One is, you know, the likelihood that the American public is going to be demanding more fuel-efficient, smaller cars. Another is because of course, recently passed legislation that raises the national fleet fuel economy requirements for manufacturers. They essentially have to sell more thrifty vehicles to make sure they can continue to sell the higher profit SUVs and trucks. So they've got a couple competing things that ultimately are going to give consumers a lot more choices in the next couple of years.
Mm. So, and it sounds like if that's really the most important thing to you, then you are going to have to look at a smaller car. The best is going to be the Prius again, but you're looking at a small something like a Civic, a Honda Civic, or this car you talked about, the Honda Fit, or the Toyota Yaris. Some of these small cars, and then even I suppose you get some. If you want a sedan and you're okay with a hybrid, you can have something like a Toyota Camry hybrid that's still going to get pretty good mileage. But then, of course, the bigger the vehicle, it's going to be bigger, it's going to be heavier, and your mileage is going to go down.
It's all trade-offs, and that's one of the things that makes shopping for a car both exciting and a bit more hands-on than some people may realize going in. There are a lot of things to consider, and I think as fuel economy and personal finances are becoming bigger issues for many people, definitely carefully consider your needs versus wants. Because in many cases, you may find that you could get a vehicle that's just a little bit smaller than really what you had your mind set on, or maybe you'd give up the V6 for a four-cylinder, and, you know, in the real world, it's actually just fine. So little compromises can go a long way, and it's not always buying the smallest car.
All right, our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Jeff Bartlett. He's the deputy editor online for autos at Consumer Reports. Their annual auto issue is out now, rating some of the best and worst cars. If you're interested in a new car or a used car, a lot of good information there for you to things for you to think about as you're trying to decide what kind of car will work best for you. You can pick it up at the newsstand. Also, you can go to www.consumerreports.org/April, and so you can look at it online. And questions here are welcome too. Now, next up, we'll talk with someone in Indiana, Wabash, Indiana, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, we were wanting to buy a flex fuel vehicle, which really pretty much limits what we have available. Would you prefer an Impala over a Chrysler product then?
would I personally?
Yes. I mean, it's an older model now.
It is. Which Chrysler model are you thinking of?
Well, we see it at Flex Fuel and the Avenger, and it's also in the van, but we really preferred the sedan.
Okay. Well, in that case, I would say lead with your heart on this one. The
really?
Chevrolet Impala is a recommended vehicle for
okay.
us, which means it does well in our testing, does well for safety, does well for reliability. And it is, and as you know, available in a flex fuel configuration. One important detail for anyone considering flex fuel is many vehicles, and I think including the Impala, are available with the same engine in flex fuel configuration and one without. Make sure you're truly purchasing what you intend to. You can't assume that everyone on the lot has the same capability.
I noticed the Impala said both of their V6s could use flex fuel, and that the larger V6 will run on 3 cylinders when needed that way. And I didn't know, is that a good thing?
Well, that's a way to increase fuel economy with the cylinder deactivation system. If the vehicle's under...
But the rating system was a little lower, I noticed.
I'm sorry, what was a little lower?
Yes, than the one that didn't, but it's a little bigger.
Well, it's a way to get more power when you need it, and it deactivates cylinders when you're just cruising. Because it really, even a big car like the Impala on the highway, doesn't really take that much horsepower to cruise along at 50 or 60 miles an hour. And this is a way to cut back. If okay. you're actually using E85, you know, an ethanol blend, you'll find that your fuel economy actually will go down a little bit.
That's right.
And this may offset it, may balance out.
Mm-hmm. But, okay, yeah, we were aware of that, but we sell to an ethanol plant, and they haul their ethanol back to our area, so we wanted to use it.
Well, that's terrific if you have it available locally. You know, I think there's a lot of positive to go with that. Just
okay.
as long as you go into it, get in the right vehicle, and understand fuel economy will be down a little bit.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. And now, are there again more manufacturers that are offering that as an option? That is a car that would burn the E85, which is 85% ethanol. That's what it means, right?
Yeah, that's right. General Motors and Chrysler and even Ford have a variety of vehicles out. Beyond those fleets, I'm not seeing a rapid acceleration, and I think part of that is because of the limited availability nationwide for the fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly in the Midwest, the fuel is much more readily available, so the brands and products that sell best in that area can most benefit from it. I would think over time, as fuel becomes more available, that you'll see more vehicles, but I don't see this as an imminent trend.
All right. Let's talk with someone here in Champaign, line number 2. Hello.
Hi. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the smart car from Mercedes-Benz. I think it just arrived in the States in January 2008. I'm kind of wondering, do you see a future for the smart car here in the States? If so, could you just talk a little bit about that? And I'll just listen on air.
Okay, sure. Thank you. The smart car is a neat little two-seater, now in its second generation, that had been sold in Europe where its size not only helps in terms of fuel economy, but for parking, because it's so small you could park it sideways rather than parallel to a curb. Smart seems to be off to a really quick start, and the timing has been fantastic for them here in the United States. The number of orders that they've already received for it are through the roof. I've seen some pretty high numbers, I'm almost afraid to quote. So I think it's going to be a success as long as fuel prices are high. It is an interesting alternative to other small cars, but it is the smallest of the small. You know, you have to carefully consider what you'd give up for fashion and arguably performance over something that might be a little larger, a little more fuel efficient, and have a wider dealer network to help you if you need some repairs.
Mm. Now, that is a Mercedes car. What you're looking at for price for a car like that? Do you know offhand?
Yeah, I do. The price in the U.S. is actually fairly affordable. It's starting at about $12,000 and goes up to about $17,000. So it's relatively inexpensive, but for that price, you know, it is a small car.
All right. Next, we'll talk to someone in Belgium, over by Danville, line number 3. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
First off, I have 2 questions. The first one is, in my business, I use a small truck purposely because I want a smaller truck. Is there any possibility of getting a diesel in these small trucks? I know they don't have them now, but is there something in the future that may do with that?
Well, there's actually an interesting new vehicle coming out from Ford in about 2 years, a year and a half, that if you're familiar with the Dodge Sprinter van,
nope.
This would be kind of a 3/4 scale version that'll have a diesel engine and have multiple configurations for commercial purposes. In terms of a pickup truck, I have not heard of a small pickup truck with a diesel engine coming soon.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. And question 2, which is one of my favorite subjects, why aren't we moving faster towards hydrogen? If you've already talked to this, I'll look at the archives.
We haven't, no. What can you say about that?
Yeah, we certainly have material online about hydrogen and its possible future. There are a few real reasons we're not moving faster. The reality is companies are going as fast as they can. This is truly a future technology that's a couple generations removed from widespread public adoption. Infrastructure, vehicle packaging, costs are all major hurdles, as well as the generation and distribution of the hydrogen itself.
Can I point out that the people in Iceland seem to be doing a great job with it? Why is it so difficult for us?
How many people are in Iceland versus the scale of the American consumer in roads?
Well, I understand that, sir, but we do have to get going, you know.
Yeah, and quite honestly, the companies, big and small, and I say big like General Motors to small being enthusiastic, fresh companies, they're going as fast as they can, but there are some very big hurdles ahead. We have seen some intriguing demonstration vehicles, such as the Honda FCX Clarity sedan, which is a very real-world car. You know, you drive it; it's a real car. And of course, BMW has been getting some press recently with its 7 Series sedan running on hydrogen. So it is the future, and we're seeing it now. But it's still some time off before it's widespread.
Now, I'm meaning that we don't burn the hydrogen just as an internal combustion type thing. We're talking about fuel cell technology, right?
Well, actually, both are possibilities. Fuel cell seems to be the greater focus, but there are prototype vehicles that are actually burning the hydrogen itself. The fuel cells seem to be the most likely or most promising technology for a myriad benefits. But it is going to take some time and a lot of money.
They do have a much higher efficiency. Thank you very much.
All right.
Yeah,
thank you. And next we'll talk with someone in Champaign, line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a 1986. My vehicle was made June 1986. It's a Nissan Maxima wagon. I'm going to have to buy a new vehicle, well, not necessarily a new vehicle. I'm probably going to have to get a used vehicle because of the cost. I need a station wagon type vehicle with all the amenities that my Nissan Maxima has.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any recommendations? I need to stay with a wagon type vehicle, but I don't want a van or anything that I would like to have something that's fairly efficient on fuel.
Okay. Well, one vehicle comes to mind is the Toyota RAV4. The RAV4, RAV4.
Oh, okay.
It's not a true car per se, but it's a car-based SUV that would have very comfortable accommodations front and rear, the hatch for the rear, lots of storage. It's the most efficient of the small SUVs.
Is that a 4-cylinder or 6-cylinder?
You can get it in either. And
okay.
One of the amazing things about the RAV4 is the 6-cylinder has about 100 more horsepower, but it only sacrifices 1 mile per gallon.
Oh.
So if performance is something you like, you know, feel free to indulge. If max efficiency is a priority, then the 4-cylinder is quite good.
No, I thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Bye-bye.
Right. Again, thank you. And we have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Just let me very quickly introduce our guest, Jeff Bartlett. He's deputy editor online for autos for Consumer Reports. The magazine has just put out its annual auto issue. It's on the newsstand. You can look for it there. You can also go online and you can read their recommendations for new used cars. Just go to www.consumerreports.org/April. Or if you'd like, you can go through our website, will.uiuc.edu. We set up a link so that you can do that. And if you're thinking about a vehicle, either a new one or pre-owned, and you want to look at their recommendations or look at some of the other information they have now in the magazine, you can take a look. And, of course, questions are welcome here. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We have some other callers and another Champagne listener here, line number two. Hello?
Yeah, I have two questions, comments, whatever. You know, with diesels, I know that in the trucking industry, it's not very clean technology, and that the government has really dragged their feet on, you know, in terms of, cleaning it up. So what happens with cars in terms of this technology?
Sure. The
a lot of pollutants, I know, with the trucking industry. There's the same problem with automobiles.
The very latest cars are extremely clean on the diesel front. Part of that's helped along with the new formulation for diesel fuel, but also part of it is the very stringent emissions requirements that they're held to. There are a couple different technologies that are used to really scrub the emissions. Mercedes, for example, is using a urea injection method of pulling out the pollutants, and you're seeing more aggressive catalytic converter systems, as well as the engines themselves are burning the fuel itself more efficiently. And I think you touch on a pretty significant issue, that if commercial trucks were held to the same clean air standards as the latest diesels, that would go a long way to cleaning up the air around our roads.
And then I haven't heard you mention what Hyundai. I mean, to me, pretty impressive company. You know, where it started, and you know, 100,000-mile warranty and all that. So, what happens with the rating with this one?
excellent question. I appreciate you bringing that up. Hyundai has a wonderful story to tell, thinking of how far they've come in the past decade. You know, 10 years ago, Hyundai was largely at the bottom of most lists you could dream up. But this year, we find that most of the latest products are actually quite good. In fact, Hyundai has two vehicles on our top picks list, the Hyundai Elantra and the Hyundai Santa Fe. This is the first time that a South Korean manufacturer has made our top picks list, and they have not one but two vehicles. So we're seeing great things from this company, and we expect it to continue with upcoming models. But as with many companies, there are variances from model to model, so it definitely pays to do your research before making assumptions. But Hyundai is doing a very impressive job.
And if you compare it against the Toyota, which I own, I love the Toyota Camry. It has a four-cylinder, but it's about $2,000 cheaper, right?
Yeah, which is a common story with the Hyundais. They compete very aggressively on price, not just for the you think of the kind of the physical structure of the vehicle, but also the featured amenities. You know, as you look close, they tend to be a good value. So as you start drilling in a little deeper, you want to look at the owner costs. Some Hyundai models depreciate more aggressively than their competitors. So while, for example, a Sonata might be a little less expensive than a Camry to purchase, over the span of your ownership, because its depreciation is a little higher and maybe fuel economy a little less, the Camry might be worth the extra money up front.
There's also a trend to not trade as often, too, I think, recently, because of the economy and all that sort of thing. But I'll bring off there. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's a trend that we've been seeing for a few years, and, boy, I can only see it continuing. Part of it's been, I think, buoyed along by the finance industry offering longer and longer loan terms. You're seeing loans 5 and 6 years, and boy, a decade or two ago, you know, many people wouldn't hold on to the car that long, let alone want to be making the payment.
Yeah. Well, and I think that also that maybe says something for the fact that overall the quality of automobiles has improved, so that actually you can expect to get a longer life out of it. There are people who have driven, you know, now it's maybe not all that unusual for people who have driven cars that are 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old and say, hey, it's still going. I think it's fine. I don't see any reason to have to replace it.
That's absolutely true, and that's a real good message, because cars are getting better in general year over year for reliability. And in some recent analysis we've done, we found that in looking at the ownership costs between the first year and later in life, we find if you combine years 6, 7, and 8, it'll still cost about the same or less than the actual cost of year 1 because of the depreciation hit. Mm-hmm. The cars are holding up, and while they may need additional service items at that stage, it doesn't offset the cost of buying a new one.
All right, let's talk with somebody in Posotum, line 3. Hello, right here. Hello.
Yes, GM came out here recently, started to advertise a Volt, mm-hmm. Electric car, I assume, but it's basically a hybrid, maybe with more batteries. How are you classifying a hybrid and an electric? At what point does one become an electric, and at what point is one a hybrid?
Well, a hybrid car is one that would combine traditional gasoline, or as we talked about earlier, perhaps diesel engine with an electric assist battery developed system. We are seeing a number of fuel cell vehicles that are coming close to the market. There's even true electrics like the Tesla Roadster that's just now hitting the market.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of classifying, for right now, we're looking at vehicles as defined by price as well as by type. So, you know, is this a family sedan? Is it a sedan under $30,000? Because ultimately, while there are some pretty exciting technologies on the horizon, for right now, people are making the very real-world decisions of, I've got this particular need and X number of dollars in my pocket. The cars will have to hold up to that.
Well, The Volt itself, if I understand it, is basically a hybrid, but it does have an engine in it, gasoline, diesel, or whatever you want to put in it, within whatever they offer. But it does the same thing. It'll go 40 miles on a charge before the gasoline engine kicks in, takes you the rest of the way.
Mm-hmm.
So is that a hybrid or is that electric?
Well, that sounds like a hybrid to me. In a way that's not dissimilar from what you see from the Prius already on the market. You know, the Prius can operate at low speeds on purely electric power.
For how far, and do you plug it in at night?
Well, the current Prius isn't plug-in, but Toyota's working on that.
That's kind of a blurry distinction there. I was just kind of curious how they're going
to... Well, one thing I've certainly seen through the years as the manufacturers don't make it easy for any of us in the media to organize our charts and so forth. But I think in the end, most people are looking at the type of car and price, and these ones with the kind of unique alternative fuel or alternative powertrains certainly deserve some special attention, and we'll detail them separately as well.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. We're down to the point where we have about a minute or so left. We'll try to get one more caller. And the next in line is in Urbana, line 1. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I'm interested in putting a little fun in my life, and I've been looking at the Mazda Miata, and I know you've always rated that very highly. But looking at the end of last year's model year, I particularly was attracted to the retractable hardtop version. But apparently the supply of those was quite small, and they were just snapped up everywhere. No one was even interested in talking at any price below list. Do you know if that situation is changing for the 08s? Have they increased the quantity of that, perhaps?
I love the way you started your question, because who doesn't want more fun in their life? And certainly the Miata is one way to do it. I don't know the particulars on the availability of the retractable hardtop. We have tested it, and we're quite impressed It's amazing to see that type of roof now available in, you know, relatively affordable vehicles. You know, of course, Pontiac has one as well in the G6. You know, I would say worst case, that soft top is so easy to use. I understand there are specific appeals of a hard top, but if you can't find it, the soft top is really nice. We've named the Miata as one of our top picks for the Fun to Drive class because it's done so well in the test score, almost matching the Porsche Boxster, but at half the price. Its reliability has been better than average, and it's just a whole lot of fun. So I hope you can get a good price on it, but I don't know the particulars of that availability.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Well, I think that we're going to have to stop, and I really have to apologize. We have a couple of people we cannot take. But if you're interested in information about cars, you can go out and look for the April 2008 issue of Consumer Reports magazine. It's the annual auto issue, and they have a lot of information about cars, new and used. You can go online, and you can look at it that way. If you want to go to www.consumerreports.org/April, you can look at all of the same information. You can also get at it through our website. We've set up a link. So it can be one of the ways that you do your research when you're trying to figure out what kind of car you're going to get for yourself and your family. And with that, we also want to say thanks to our guest, Jeff Bartlett. He's the deputy editor online for Autos Consumer Reports. Jeff, thanks very much.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always fun to talk cars, and there are a lot of issues for people to think about. Hopefully, people will do the research and find the right car for their needs.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, Focus 580, this show is made possible in part by a grant from Bodywork Associates, offering professional licensed massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. Bodywork Associates offers four area locations, including one on the lower level of the Illini Union at the Oasis. That's it for us here on Focus. We want you to stay tuned, though. Coming up next, it's the Afternoon Magazine, the host for the show, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you very much, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the program, we will talk with a historian. Her name is Mary Beth Hamilton, and she is the author of In Search of the Blues. In the book, she tells the stories of the white men and white women who went looking for the music of the Delta. We'll talk with Mary Beth Hamilton following the 1 o'clock news this afternoon. Let's take a look now at commodity prices in Kansas City. March wheat trading at $11.70, up 17. In Chicago, March wheat, $11.21, up 43.5. July, $10.47, up 40. March corn, $5.57.5, up 14.5. May corn, $5.68.5, up 14. July, $5.80, up 13.25. December, $5.78, up 10.75. March beans, $15.25, up 31. May, $15.33.5, up 22.75. July, $15.44.5, up 24.5. November, $14.08, up 9.25. March meal, $3.76 even, up $5.70. March oil, $68.79, up $1.59. At the Merck in Chicago, April live cattle trading at $91.10, down 10. June, $92.60, down 30. March feeder cattle, $100.75, down 90. April, $104 even, down 95. And April lean hogs, $57.20, that contract up 35 cents. Outside markets, April crude, $103.78, up $4.28. The CRB index, $418.80, up $9.96. The U.S. dollar, $73.41, down 28. And the Dow, as of 15 minutes ago, was up 54 points at 12,272. You're tuned to WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications.